So far we have been listening to talks that focus mainly on the heat transport in turbulent convection. Today I'm going to talk about another issue in the problem, which is more on the statistics of local measurements, in particular the intermittency of temperature field in turbulent convection. What I'm going to tell you today was, most of the things I'm going to tell you today was reported in this work, and there will be some new results coming from our ongoing work with my student, Kotlan Chow. So the data that we analyzed in this work came from the Chicago convection experiment of low-temperature helium gas that you know very well. And the particular data that I'm going to show you were taken at the center of the cell, which is an aspect ratio 1/2 cell, and the height is 40 centimeter. From an earlier work, we have studied the statistics of the temperature difference, which is the temperature at a later time minus the temperature at the present time. The delay time is the tau. And tau is in units of the sampling time, tau naught, which is around, the sampling frequency is like a few hundred hertz. In this particular work, we studied the change of the shape of the probability density function of this T tau as a function of tau. So it's fine that the statistics of this T tau, the temperature difference, changes as we change the separation time tau. And it's fine that the change occurs only between these two time scales, the dissipated time, tau D, and the turnover or the circulation time, tau C. So let me just remind you what I've been fine. So here what I'm showing is the distribution, the probability density distribution of the temperature difference for this particular Rayleigh number, 7 times 10 to the 10, and they're all normalized by their own mean square fluctuation. And the N here, actually, I didn't tell you. Let me write down here. So the tau is taken as a function, as in units of the sampling time, tau zero. Just to get a large range of tau, I use 2 to the power n. So n is that n there. So for small tau, you see a very sharp. Sorry? To the power n. Large N is it's not small scale. This is Gaussian. Yeah. Okay. So you see you definitely see a change in the shape. And from this change, we conclude that the temperature field is intermittent in the sense that the statistics depend on the scale. Okay. So in the present work, we try to understand further this intermittency. There are several questions, particular questions that we want to address and try to answer. The first one is, is there any difference in the statistical features of T tau for tau that is smaller than tau B and tau larger than tau B? And tau B is the time scale corresponding to the Bolzano scale, LB. So I define tau B like this. So tau B divided by the tau C, which is the largest time scale, the turnover time, is like the ratio of LB to L. So I want to know whether there's any change in the difference. We expect there may be some change. And if the answer to the first question is yes, then we want to further address the issue of whether the balance between the nonlinear advection term and the buoyancy term holds for length scale larger than LB. In particular, this balance is a key ingredient leading to the Bolzano-Obukhov scaling that sort of being observed in the frequency spectrum in some experiments. So this. And the third question we want to ask is, can the intermittency of the temperature field be described by a moment hierarchy of the form proposed by Shay LaVey some years ago for the energy dissipation rate? That is, in particular, we want to know whether the ratio of consecutive order of structure functions or consecutive moments of the temperature difference obey such a relation. That is, the ratio of the p plus 2 to p plus 1 power can be related to the ratio of the p plus 1 to p structure function. Here beta t is a parameter, which is between 0 and 1. And we will see that this beta t actually is a parameter characterizing the degree of intermittency. If beta t is 1, that is, it is non-intermittent. And if beta t is 0, it's very intermittent. The final question we want to ask or address is, will ideas of Kolmogorov's refined similarity hypothesis be fruitful or useful for understanding the intermittency? For example, can we attribute the intermittency of the temperature field to spatial fluctuations of the locally averaged temperature dissipation rate? So in the following time, I will try to go over these questions one by one. So let me just put them over there. So let's start by addressing the first question. As we know, and we have already heard, I guess in the first talk by Bernard Castaigne, that there's no scaling behavior in the structure function. So I just want to address this a bit more in a bit more details. So I'm putting up a schematic graph here. So suppose we try to plot a structure function, which I just used the symbol SB, as a function of the time, the separation time tau, in a log-log scale. So I've put down also the relevant time scales, or link scales, if you want, in the graph. So we know there's the smallest time tau d, which is the dissipation time, and then the largest time tau c, above which the structure function does decorrelate. Well, what it means is the structure function doesn't depend on the time separation tau, so it will be flat. And for regions below the tau d, just from the fact that the temperature can be differentiable, then you know that the structure function should go like tau to the p. So in a log-log plot, the slope will be p. So you see there's not much. Well, first thing is that the ratio between tau c and tau d can be quite big, depending on the Rayleigh number. In this particular case, the number I put there are for Rayleigh number equals to 7 times 10 to the 10. This is about 2 decades. But if there is a change in behavior for times below tau b and above tau b, you see that will make your structure function, well, if there is any scaling, it will be difficult to be seen. Well, I should also mention the tau b, I just use this formula without any prefactor. That is, I just take the prefactor to be 1. So Nusselt number is known from the experiment, Rayleigh-Prandtl also, so you can easily calculate tau b. There's no adjustable, well, I just use the test definition for my tau b. So I just want to say this is if the main reason why, you know, I guess it's the main reason why it's difficult to see any scaling, even if there is any there.
Are you using some coefficient of order 1?
No. Well, the Bourgeois scale is defined in the usual way, and then just this, okay. In any case, so we'll just go on, and I'm showing you here a plot, not of the structure function itself, but the structure function normalized by the second order. Well, normalized this way. Essentially, this is the moment of the normalized temperature difference. So I find that if you just look at the structure function as a function of the separation time tau, you don't see any discernible scaling. But if you normalize the structure function, so there are several techniques or tricks to try to get some scaling from the data. But one way I did here is I just normalized them and plotted as a function of tau. And it turns out that there are regions that you can, you know, try to put straight lines on this kind of plot. And what I'm trying to convince you is actually this is not too crazy to do. Well, I'm going to give more evidence supporting that it's indeed a change in the behavior. So if I just go on and put straight lines on this kind of plot, I'll find that there's a slight change in slope. And to put the notation like this, if there is really a straight line on this kind of plot, it means this function will have a scaling with tau, and I just denote the scaling exponent mu p. So, yes?
In the middle,
yes, at the center. Yes, at the center. So, there's a slight change in the value of mu p.
So you just plot it as x1, normal as
x2. No, I normalize by s2, the second order.
Right. Okay.
Yes, but I just, yes, this is just for s1. You can do for other, and a similar behavior was found.
What's the value of the
number? 7 times 10 to 10. Okay. So if you do the other kind of plot, the famous ESS, the extended self-similarity kind of plot, by plotting a structure function of one order versus the other. Here I just show S1 versus S2. And again, I put in these arrows correspond to the time for tau D, tau C, and tau B. And again, if you put up, if you plot such plot, such kind of plots, you will see there's a slight, well, there are regions that you can put straight lines. Means there is some scaling. And again, if you just put, you know, go ahead and do that, you'll find there's a slight change in the slope. So referring to the first question I put up there, so indeed, if we try to fit the small regions, the small regimes, you know, one is between tau D and tau B, and the other is between tau B and tau C by power law, then we will find there's a slight change in the exponents, which I called mu p and alpha p. Alpha p is the relative exponents, if you want. Okay? But if I do another plot, which is putting the normalized structure function of one order versus the other, what I'm plotting here is, in this case, p is 0.5. So it's putting sp normalized by the second order structure function versus s1 normalized by the second order structure function. So the scaling here, the exponent I denote as hp, but hp will be related to mu p this way. If I plot the structure functions this way, I find that there's here I'm showing data for various Weyl numbers, in particular the symbols for the three Weyl numbers are shown there. So in the inset, I just focus on the Weyl number 7 times 10 to the 10. The main message that I want to convey by this plot is, if you do this kind of plot, you'll find that what you can you can describe the whole range from tau D to tau C by just one exponent, HP. So what it means is, if we believe there's a small change between the two regions, then there's something remain unchanged. Okay, what remains unchanged here is this ratio of mu p over mu 1. So some common features exist in the two regimes of scales. Okay, before I answer the second question, let me go to the third one first. So third one is whether intermittency can be described by a moment hierarchy. So let me put it. So I want to answer this question. And to answer this question, I first generalize the moment hierarchy proposed by Shalevey to this form. The difference between the two is actually, instead of p plus 1, I just generalize it to p plus q, where q can be you know, some values other than 1. But there's nothing deep in this, you know, generalization. Is if that holds, actually this will hold, you can show that. The only good thing about this is then I can use q, a smaller q. Like, actually, I'm going to use q equals to 0.4. The main reason for that is then I can check that hierarchy without the need of calculating structure functions of very high order, you know, because the data is not very long. It's less than a million data point in this case. So I can't go to very high order structure function. So to check this particular hierarchy, well, this has been checked. I should mention this has been checked by Sotobato and others for data for the locally average energy dissipation rate, the velocity field, and also by the passive scalar. But to check that, there are some tricks. So I just rewrite the, using the relation above, I write it once for tau 1 and then another for tau 2 and then divide it to 2. That eliminates the constants APQ. And I'll get this form. So if the moment hierarchy is indeed valid, then a lot of plot of this quantity versus this quantity should give me straight lines with slopes beta t to the power q for given pairs of tau 1, tau 2, and fixed q. So this is the only important thing, you know, in this slide. So if the moment hierarchy is indeed valid, then this kind of plot should give me straight lines with the slope beta t to the power q. So let me show you the data. So I'm doing exactly the kind of plots that I just mentioned for fixed q equals to 0.4, and p, I change p. So these different data points corresponding to different p, and different symbols correspond to different pairs of tau 1, tau 2. So indeed, we see straight lines in this lot of plots, which means first that they're straight lines, and also they have the same slopes. Because they have the same slopes, beta t to the power q. So from this plot, we can see that this hierarchy is indeed valid. And more importantly, we find that for tau 1, tau 2, both below tau b, the time scale corresponding to a Bojano scale, or above, you know, both of them above tau b, the same slope is being found. What it means is the same beta t for the whole range. So let me just repeat again what we find from this kind of analysis. So the shape of a type moment hierarchy is indeed valid, and we have the same beta t for the whole region. And if this kind of hierarchy holds, you can already get an expression for the exponents mu p. Mu p is the exponents, mu p is the exponents of the normalized structure function of this form. And if you find hp, which is the exponents for the GSS plot, the ratio of mu p divided by mu 1, you find that this is related only to beta t. And that's why in the earlier plot, we find only one region for the whole range. In this kind of plot. So this is consistent with the finding that beta t is the same for the whole region. So up till now we have seen, well, let me just recap here. We have seen that there is indeed some change in the statistics. In the statistical features of T tau, but the parameter beta p is the same for the whole region. So just want to convince you, you know, the HP only depend on beta t, and if I can extract HP from the analysis I showed earlier, and fit by this form that I just showed, and indeed I find beta t here. Using this method, I find beta t is 0.63, which is consistent with the earlier value of 0.62 plus or minus 0.02, using the direct verification of the moment hierarchy. The line are a fit using this form. And the best fit, the value that best fit the data is this beta t, 0.63. By the experiment, as before. No, well, I'm going a bit fast, I guess. HP is determined by such kind of plots. Okay. Yes. structure function?
Normalized structure function.
Normalize the one I show you, or? I take
object is very close to one altogether. Numerator. No, but it's two plus two over just two.
No.
So I don't have a two.
No,
if two is small, then the numerator is like
one.
So the thing that's close to one.
You mean? I didn't follow the question. So you mean here? This one? That Q?
Yes, I'm just curious to see the ratio in any of those brackets.
This ratio?
Yeah.
I show, well, in this, okay. This is the ratio of one of those. So the number, okay. Yeah, the number is, well, you know, each is around 0.1, minus 0.1 is in the log scale, so it's around,
right.
Yeah.
So the one to the extent of all these numbers are small.
Yeah. Okay, so after that, I want to go back to the second question. The second question, you know, now, well, we see that there's indeed some change in the behavior of the T tau below or above the Bojano scale. So the question I want to ask is whether this balance holds for the scales above the Bojano scale. So I'll argue that if I take this literally, that it's the balance, then I'll get a relation between the velocity structure functions and the temperature structure functions. In particular, this balance will give me a relation between the two exponents. And now from the previous analysis I show you, I get expressions for theta p. Now theta p is of this form. This follows directly from the fact that the moment hierarchy holds. And I determine the beta t already, which is about 0.62. And excuse me. And the parameters a and b can be estimated from plots of showed earlier from the exponents of mu p and alpha p. And before I show you that mu p and alpha p are a little bit different for tau smaller than tau b and tau larger than tau b. So indeed, the a and b are different for the two range. So what I did next is try to compare the theta p using the values of a and b for scales above the Bojano scale, that is here, and compare with the exponents for the velocity structure functions. It would be nice if I have both the temperature data and the velocity data, but as we all know, that is quite difficult to measure the velocity field in convection. So I don't have access, well, there are no velocity measurements in this particular experiment. So what I did is try to compare these values with the theta p obtained in a numerical simulation. The numerical simulations were done by Banzi et al. And was reported in the paper. Well, I want to stress that this is really a preliminary check. I would like to, actually, one reason I talk about this is I want people, maybe if they have, you know, simulations, then we can try to check this directly, because this balance is a key ingredient for the Bojano scaling. So what I'm showing here is the circles are the data or the numbers I got from that paper in the numerical simulations, and the straight line is the line described there. This is the prediction, if you want, using this balance and the numbers, the exponents I got from the analysis of the temperature field, this theta p, this form.
Theta p determines the exponent versus the distance.
Well, you know, it's only measurements at the center, so actually all measurements refer to difference in time.
With the time, okay?
Yeah, with time. Yes.
But not the idea.
No, okay. There are several things. Okay. Theta p is of this form. Okay? If I show you the moment hierarchy holds, then theta p will be of this form. And beta t can be estimated directly from the check of the hierarchy. A and b can be estimated from this is the normalized structure function plot, and this is the ESS, the relative exponents. Okay?
But you compare this formula.
Yes?
With some theta p obtained in other way, and with the exponent versus the timeline,
yes.
Okay, not obtained, theta p is not obtained by ESS.
Oh, you mean theta p, this, no, you don't mean theta p. You mean
yes,
the ZP.
Theta p corresponding to a point in your following transparency.
Okay, I should mention, yeah, this, the ZP in the simulation is obtained by ESS. By ESS. So it's relative exponents, okay. But they also get a number for the relative exponents to the third order, and they get number for third order. So. Another, this one?
So on the first line, I would expect the energy balance, so what I would expect after 3 over R goes like UR plus 3 times T. Yeah, so the energy balance.
Well, actually, it's fair. You know, I pushed this to very far. You know, for the Bojano scaling, actually, you only need p equals to 2. You know, the spectra. So I'm pushing it, you know, further, and you expect maybe you expect this only holds for p equals to 2 or 3 in your case, 2. Yeah. But I want you, you know, that's difficult to check because of the. Okay, I take. But if I just push it far, you know, say this kind of arguments can be extended to all order, then I can compare the two. And the main thing I want to convey in this plot is the symbols and the line do not have the same form, mathematical form. So, well, and I want to say preliminary check of this kind shows that this balance in this particular form does not hold. But what I really want is to hope to see more of the check of this kind, you know, in either experiments or simulations. 28, okay. So let me just, the story actually gets better if I go to the last part. So I just want to get to the last part. So the fourth or the final question that I want to address is, will Kolmogorov's the refined similarity hypothesis ideas be fruitful to understand the intermittency? In the sense that, can we attribute the intermittency to spatial fluctuations of the locally average temperature dissipation rate? So what it really means? So I would argue this way. I would say if indeed we can attribute the intermittency to the spatial fluctuations of the locally average temperature dissipation rate, then if I fix that temperature dissipation rate to some fixed number and study the statistics of this t tau, then it should not be intermittent. So first I have to find a way to calculate my locally average temperature dissipation rate. So I'll just say, using the same spirit, you know, of Taylor hypothesis, instead of really, you know, finding the tie tau, in any case, I could not because I don't have the data. I just calculate the tie tau this way. I estimate the tie tau by, instead of gradients, I use derivatives. And I average over the regions of tau. And then I study the conditional PDF of T tau at fixed values of chi tau. So I'll use the symbol this to mean that. Yeah? Familiar, okay. So if I study the, well, this y tau, because I just want you to see whether there's any change in the shape, so I normalize the quantity by root mean square fluctuation. But here it's more complicated because I fix it as a particular value of chi tau. So this root mean square fluctuation will be a function of chi tau. Here I only show you a plus for one value of chi tau. And this is the conditional PDFs in log scale and versus the variable in linear scale. And these are for tau smaller than tau b. Okay, thank you. So I just want to, this is smaller tau and then larger tau, and then as tau increase, go this way. So well, there are many interesting features in this plot. The main thing is you see there's a double peak. I think I can explain that, but that's not my real focus, at least at this point. But the main point here is I wanted to tell you that you still see changes in the shape. Okay? There's changes in the shape for tau smaller than tau b. But if I go to tau larger than tau b, this is the same plot, same kind of plot for tau larger than tau b. And now you see all the data points collapse, meaning that the conditional PDF does not depend on the tau anymore for tau larger than tau b. And indeed, it is a Gaussian. The solid line is a standard Gaussian. It's not a fit. It's a standard Gaussian. So all the data points fall on the same line, which is a Gaussian in this case. Sorry? How non-Gaussian? It's more like a, you know, for the temperature itself is more like exponential in this, for this very number. So when tau is very large, it's like exponential, sort of. Okay. So let me just summarize what I have told you. I've told you several things. First, I hope to convince you already that there's indeed changes in the statistical features of T tau. If you don't buy the slight change in the exponents at the beginning, I hope at least you see there's a significant change in the behavior by studying this kind of conditional PDF. So I'll take that as the main evidence for there's a change in the statistical features. So the change really is the fluctuations of T tau becomes non-intermittent at fixed values of chi tau for tau larger than tau b. So what we have already seen is the conditional PDF has the same, in this case, Gaussian shape for tau larger than tau b. And going back to the four questions I put up at the beginning, the answers here are, indeed, the intermittency of T tau can be described by the Shaler-Bay-type moment hierarchy. And the interesting thing here is that the value of beta t is the same for the whole region. And actually, this value of beta t is, I would say, is consistent with the value one obtained for the passive scalar. And if you believe there's scaling, then I can get a form for the theta p. Theta p will be of this form. And what is different is AB. A and B, the parameters, have different values below or above the Bojanov scale. So, okay. I think I have a final point, but couldn't find a slide. But that's basically it, you know. Okay. So I guess I'll just stop here.
Further comments? Yeah. Go ahead.
I have a problem in the sense that when you compare the Bolzano relation with Delphi, okay, you put here today some data, this is complicated. Indeed, first of all, you compute all the data that the range of P equals between 0 and 2, and then you extrapolate the P equal weight.
No, well, it's okay, yeah. So I compute P to 4 because it's P over 2 there. So it's true. You know, the A beta T and B are only obtained from data from this range, and I extend this true. No, but this the exact relation is consistent with this. No, actually, that's this. Okay, sorry. Well, most of the things you mentioned are correct, but I think this is the same spirit. It's not more than or less than what has been done. You know, if the direct comparison of this kind of balance is actually it's not worse than the one you just described. It's the same spirit actually. Well, maybe I
want to comment on the for the law of opacity, because there was for velocity paper in Vassan and Polovitsky in Review of Modern Physics where the same error was made. So I want to underline the point. If you take the dissipation and dissipation is taken as a sum of GT on the flow in the arm square. Yeah. On some endeavor. And then the problem is that when you have something like this, and you have in some endeavor that the average of the square of the flow is large, what you impose in the average is that the average flow is large. Asking for some value of this has a tendency to impose the average flow to be large. And so it gives a bimodal distribution. It is centered on the square root of this quantity for the total data. The good way we made with Gami is to suppress, to take a modified thing and to look at the dissipation like this. Minus the total delta T to R. So you subtract the average guidance before to make the sum of the T of the R. And then all, at least for velocity, nice unit will be the same here, all the condition distribution comes on the Gaussian.
Even for small scales?
Even for small scales.
I should check that, okay.
And here is a real challenge to understand why it's Gaussian, why the large scale distribution is not Gaussian. In velocities, turbulent velocities, the large scale distribution is Gaussian. And one is very happy to find a Gaussian and the condition distribution. But here, we are, as we, you remark, you obtain a Gaussian, while the large scale distribution is not a Gaussian.
That's different. Yeah. Okay.
And
that
most
of this pairing idea.
Well, I will not put it that way. I will say, okay, if you, they are just, they are what they are, you know. They are the statistics of temperature between two times. And they may be related to the statistics of the temperature between two spatial points if some kind of relation can, you know, like the Taylor hypothesis holds. But I'm not saying that I mean that the Taylor, I believe the Taylor hypothesis. I'm not using the Taylor hypothesis to convert the two of them, but rather I just put them as they are and show you that by themselves you have interesting features. But they may be related if the Taylor hypothesis holds. And we all know that there's some doubt, you know, whether this hypothesis holds at the center of the cell. And that's actually, it would be nice to check using simulation. I think, you know, it's easy. You study the spectra of both the frequency spectra or the wave number spectra at the same point, say at the center, and you can compare and see whether they're the same.
One more quick one, then.
Yeah, you just go ahead.
Yeah,
the Constantine.